Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I think the ones who went on to do better didn't get drunk the night before.
An amazing coincidence.
I would learn from that if anybody gets the opportunity.
Well, hello and welcome to the Baked Down podcast. My name is Josh Landy, founder of Baked with a Legend, which we'll come on to later. Each week, alongside Bake Off alumni Howard Middleton and Jane Beadle, we'll be reviewing the latest happenings in the Great British Bake Off tent. And so for those of you who want some extra insight and some of the inside knowledge, you are in the right place. We should let you know we are completely unaffiliated to the show or indeed Love Productions, but we are huge fans of their work. So Jane, thanks for coming and being part of the podcast. This is great.
Well, that's absolutely pleasure, and being part of Bake Off in even the smallest way, just talking to you, Josh, is absolute delight to me.
Well, you weren't the smallest way. You're all 10 weeks of your series.
Well, smallest way talking to you now. I'm sort of clinging on to Bake Off with my fingernails.
Right, Bake Off stardom lives on. And Howard, you were back on series 4, we're now on series 10, but do people still come up to you and sort of say, are you Howard off Bake Off?
They do, and it's lovely, because sometimes you do get people who genuinely recognise you, and then other times you get people who think they know you from somewhere but aren't quite sure.
Do they come and ask you why they might know you?
Yes, exactly. And they think they know you, they sort of say, do you go to Slimming World, or do you go to my gym, or do you have a florist?
Do you go to Slimming World?
Yeah.
If you did, it would be an amazing coincidence. You could really confuse them.
I know.
That's amazing. Well, look, we're so pleased you're here. We're here for the next 10 weeks as we're going to watch through the 2019 series of Bake Off, which I understand 16,000 people applied for, Jane. That's what Prue said on TV the other day.
Did she? That's an awful lot of people.
Do you know how many applied in your year?
No, I have no idea. The word went round that it's 20 or 22,000, but nobody would confirm. Everybody kept very shtum from Love Productions.
Wow. Howard, any idea of the numbers involved?
I think ours was 17,000. And the reason why was that I remember one particular week, Mary Berry said, "Are you enjoying the experience?" And I said, "Oh, yes, Mary." And she said, "I should hope so. There were 17,000 other people who'd like to be in your shoes."
Wow.
Yeah, that's quite cutting, actually.
Yeah, it's a little bit, isn't it? Of course, you were on back in the day of Mary Berry. And look, we're going to hear over the next 10 weeks so much about your experiences and what it's like to be on the show. But we're also going to, of course, be looking in detail at the episodes as they go by each week. And one of my first things that leapt out that I think people will want to know, for the two of you who had to presumably keep it a secret so long, Howard, that you were going to go into the tent, just how long, firstly, is that process between getting the final day of going on air, let's say, and when you were told you're going to be on the show?
So the final day of sort of being in the audition process,
yes.
Jimmy. Yeah, I would think that was probably February. And then I found out in March, which is when they do that filming of what they call the backstory, where they'll come and take some shots of you, you know, doing stuff at work. So I'd pretty much a month before I found out, really.
Okay. They come and do a little bit of filming. We saw a little bit of that in the opening episode. How do you explain to your colleagues why there's a camera there looking to do some filming with you?
It was weird, really, because at the time I worked for the city council and they wanted to do some filming in a park. And when they found out about that, apparently the cabinet member for recreation needed to know that the BBC were doing some filming in a park. So it's a bit sort of, I think they're making a big deal out of this. I'm just going to be running in a park, that's all. But yeah, people at work, I explained that, yeah, you sort of have to tell close colleagues what's happening.
So your close colleagues knew?
They did know, yes. Okay. And then when that episode was broadcast, people said that they didn't believe that this was a real office, that we'd actually set it up to be able to film in it. But it was genuinely our office, and I genuinely was taking cakes into work.
That's brilliant. So you had this this month or so between getting the call and they came and did this bit of filming. But then, of course, it doesn't go on air until several months after that.
No, absolutely, yeah. So we were talking about late August before that went on air, yeah.
And Jane, I think people will be intrigued to know. You've obviously told your family, some of your close friends presumably knew or had to know that you were on the show. Who was the first person you got in touch who you wouldn't have told? Do you remember the first? Was it someone you hadn't heard from in years who sent you a message?
Well, I don't remember exactly who would be the first person to get in contact, but I was, 61, I think, when I was on the show. I was very old. And the first person I remember getting in touch was somebody I used to play tennis with in my early 20s. So there was a gap of 40 years that I hadn't heard from this person, and suddenly he came out of the woodwork going, "Are you the Jane?" I wasn't Beadle then. Jane that used to play at where did I live? I can't even remember where. Brentwood Tennis Club. And yeah, so we had a couple of those appear out of the woodwork, funnily enough.
How did he find you? Didn't have a mobile number when you were 20.
No, they didn't exist when I was 20.
That's, yes.
No. I'm assuming from my Instagram or something. And then Googled it, and then it came up with an email. Or maybe because I run my own business, he then Googled the name, and then the contact would have come up through the business. So I don't know. I never asked him. I was just so shocked.
Before you went on, Howard, were you on social media?
No, I wasn't actually. And I think it was a bit of an eye-opener, really. I suppose I was a little bit frightened of taking that plunge, really. But I think ours was probably one of the first series where we were, I wouldn't say forced, but actively encouraged. They said that the series before, there'd been some really nice kind of conversations going on while the programme was broadcast between the bakers and the public. And so we were sort of encouraged to get involved a bit more. And actually, yes, it was, I'm glad we did that, really, because it was a great experience to do that.
And you mentioned the kind conversations going online. Was there any kind of guidance given to you, Jane, about how you should be interacting with the public whilst the show's on air?
Not so much guidance on how we should be interacting. We were all very naive as far as social media is concerned. Most of us had only just really got Instagram, and some of us had never set foot anywhere near Twitter. But what we were encouraged was to not look at any bad stuff. Because I think if people tag you in a post, they're generally saying something nice. Where they're going to say something nasty is whereas they might go hashtag Jane Bake Off. She looks like somebody from the in-betweeners, ha ha ha. They don't tag you in that. My kids found all that and then laughed at it, but I didn't look for anything that I wasn't tagged in, and people were lovely. I don't think everybody always has quite the same experience, but we were encouraged to ignore the nasty stuff and just look at the nice stuff. And I think that's still really, really good advice, because there are, for every 1,000 lovely people, there's only one nasty, and they're just yeah, not worth taking to heart. But unfortunately, they're the ones that always manage to get you where it hurts. And most of the people in Bake Off are not out there thinking how great they are. Most of them are in there feeling a little bit insecure and hoping that they're living up to previous years. I know all of us did. So if somebody tells us that we're absolutely useless, we're probably going to take it to heart. So just don't go looking for it.
Okay, I'm sure we'll come back to talking about social media and the interactions that you have with the public whilst you're on the show. And talking of which, if anyone listening to the podcast wants to get in touch with us over the next 10 weeks while we're recording this, you can tweet us at BakeWithALegend. And you can email us, thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com, and we'll be glad to read out your questions, some of which we've actually already got from a request we put out on social media. So, Jane, another question people will want to know, coming into week one, when do you meet the fellow contestants? Because some of them maybe you bumped into an audition, I'm assuming.
Yes, yeah, some of them you may have bumped into at an audition, but you don't know them. And you don't know at that stage that they're going to get through, because you meet lots of people at auditions. As it happened, Michael and Candice from my year were at my final audition. I just remember Candice's brilliant red shoes and matching lipstick. She looked so amazing. But you actually meet them the night before you start filming. So you walk down into a hotel. All the crew are there going, hello, Jane, how lovely to see you. And you haven't got a clue who they are, but of course they've seen all your audition tapes. And then you go into a room and meet everybody else. And that's about, I don't know, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening. And the following morning, 6 o'clock, you're whisked off to the tent. So you've only met them about 12 hours before you first enter the tent.
Howard, was that a similar experience for you? Was there anyone?
Absolutely.
Anyone in your final audition who made it onto the show with you?
Yes, I think Mark, Rob, Lucy, there were quite a few. The thing that shocked me was that I remembered Nancy Birtwistle from the auditions and was so surprised when she wasn't there on the on that first occasion when you meet. And of course, she went on to appear in the series after and then won it. So I think they are looking for a particular mix of characters and personalities and so on. And who are we to argue really about how they get that kind of blend, really?
Yeah, absolutely. So 6 a.m. you're whisked off to the tent. What's that feeling like of seeing the tent for the first time? Presumably, well, tell us, Howard. I mean, you were series four. Had you watched the first three series? And what was that feeling like going into the tent for the first time?
I think it's overwhelming, really. I mean, I particularly remember that people often say, oh, do you get a chance to do a bit of practice before you actually start the first bake? And you don't. There was a woman from the oven people, from NEF, and she was explaining how the ovens worked. And I was just so overwhelmed by the fact that I'm thinking, I'm in the Bake Off tent. And then she left and I thought, oh gosh, I don't remember anything that she'd said. So I think the home economist was really annoyed that I kept having to ask how to use the oven, because I hadn't listened to anything that the woman from NEF had said.
Well, it's understandable, I can imagine. I mean, I'm the one that hasn't been in the tent of the three of us. I can imagine it is very overwhelming. Did you found the same, Jane? Or
it was a really bizarre experience for me, because we arrived and then we walked down into the tent to have a look at it, and we're all sort of giggly and silly and, oh my God, it's a Bake Off tent. And then I think a lot of us found it to be a very familiar space. Obviously, we were series seven, so we'd watched a few more series than you, but it felt very familiar because it's exactly as it is on the telly. Obviously, there are cameras, obviously there are sound crews around and things like that, but suddenly you feel as though you're in this very safe space, because for 10 weeks every year, you've been watching it on a box in the corner of your sitting room. So, yes, it was exciting, and we were all nervous, but not quite as overwhelming as I thought it would be.
Right. Is that the first moment it all felt real? Because you mentioned how, you know, the February, that's when you're sort of going through this process. March, they've come and done a bit of filming with you. But does it only feel real once you're standing there for the first time waiting for your, you know, the first baking element of the whole show?
I think it does. And I think the I remember feeling this is basically a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I've got to make the most of this. And that in itself made me feel more nervous. You know, I was literally, because we'd started filming, this was April when we started actually filming, and I remember it was a bitterly cold day. It was so, so cold. And although you're creating this illusion of eternal bake-off summer, it certainly didn't feel like that. But you think, I've got to do the best I can possibly do, really, because, as I say, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Just to give some further context, so Bake With A Legend, and the reason why I know Howard and Jane, is a company that gives fans of the show the opportunity to arrange baking classes where former contestants such as Jane and Howard come and teach. So if you are interested in more information on that, do head to bakewithlegend.com. And we're also going to be having some competitions during these 10 weeks where you as a listener can win some places at some of our upcoming classes. So I will be sure to tell you more about that in due course. Well, look, we are going to invariably talk about this week's episode, and it was, you know, incredibly exciting. Jane, we all got the picture last week, didn't we, of the contestants for the new series. 13 people, firstly. Were you excited about the Baker's Dozen? What were your first impressions of all these people before you saw the show?
I think my first impression was, oh, my God, they're so young. It's a bit like when you get to my age, you think policemen are young and doctors are young. They're all so young. Phil, I'm sorry if you're listening, but you're the oldie amongst the bunch, whereas, and you're under 60. We have three over 60 in our year. But, yeah, I don't know. Is that because it's Channel 4 and they're looking for a younger demographic for their audience? I don't mind. You know, I think they look like a really lovely bunch. And having watched the first episode, they all seem like a really, really lovely bunch.
You know, we've got here seven in their 20s, Howard. Seven in their 20s. As Jane said there, then, you know, most of the rest in the 30s, Helena 40 and Phil 56. So it's certainly a really young crowd. But Howard, if you look at the winners of recent years, you know, Rahul was 30 going in, Sophie 33, Candice 31, Nadia 30. There's a trend there, you could argue.
Yeah, there is. And I mean, we were talking about that kind of mix of personalities. And obviously, there are different ways of getting that mix. You know, it's not necessarily just about age. You're looking for personalities that you can relate to. But the most important thing is that basically they should be able to bake. So we're looking for good bakers. And I think good bakers can come from any age, really. So I think it's particularly good if you've got people who you can relate to. And I feel I can relate to these, even though they are younger bakers, so that's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. If you look at, you know, even the year before Nadia, you know, Nancy, who you mentioned not quite getting on in your series, who was 60 when she went onto the show. So yeah, very clearly the success has come from all ages. Was there anyone, Howard, who leapt up as an early favourite looking at the picture? Because people on the internet have got these theories about where you might be positioned in the photos that are put out there as to how that might portray how far you're going to get. I don't know if you're probably too busy. You've probably got too much going on to have a look at these internet theories.
I don't know. There used to be a theory, I must say, that there were two photos that were taken of the full group of bakers. One was taken on the first day of filming, and that's the first time that the 12 or 13 are together. And then the other photo, there's usually, you can tell they've got different clothes on, and I haven't seen this second photo, but that's normally taken on the day of the final, and you can sort of usually guess who doesn't look tired by that point, so you can eliminate people. But as I say, I've not seen a second photo. All the photos that I've seen, they're all wearing exactly the same things that they wear on the in that first episode. So, but if we do come across the second photo, then we might be able to decide who doesn't look tired.
Okay,
I looked very fresh in my photo from the final, I would have to say. I was looking at one of Andrew, Candice and I in the green room waiting to go on, and we all looked blooming, Howard. Blooming tired.
I thought Candice in your year looked too groomed to be in the final, but she completely did the whole series looking
And apparently the auditions, from what Jane was saying.
Yeah.
So no one that you particularly early favourites, just from looking at them before you even watched episode one, Howard?
Not without watching the episode. No, I think they all look lovely, friendly people, which is a great help, isn't it?
The bookmakers, I think, I'm not really sure, to be honest, it's mainly for the PR of having a story about it. They did install Alice as the early favourite at 4-1, I read. So there you go. I mean, that was just purely off the photographs in the last couple of days. So
really?
That was interesting. Alice, as I found out, is a school teacher at the school I went to. So I really feel like a bit of synergy towards supporting her. Yeah, she's a geography teacher at the City of London School for Boys. So good on Alice, and I hope that she goes far. And the other thing we should probably mention, I feel a huge affinity towards Phil. Phil has actually attended a Bake with a Legend class in the past, and was, you know, incredible by all accounts, and was an incredibly capable baker. So I think I'm personally cheering Phil on for the rest of this series. So, Jane, you mentioned that you were sort of 61 when you went on. Did you feel like you had to sort of put an arm around the shoulder of some of the younger contestants? Because it's quite a nervous environment to walk into, even if you're any age.
I didn't feel I had to, because so many of them were actually quite young in our year. Michael was very young. I think he had his 19th or 20th birthday the week he went out, bread week, sadly. So yes, happy birthday, Michael. But a lot of them were the age of my kids. So I think I would naturally go and help or try and encourage. But I think one of the lovely, lovely things about Bake Off is age does not matter. It doesn't matter that some of them are, as I said, the age of my kids. They treat us not as sort of the dowager baker, although Benjamin used to keep telling me I was old school, but I guess with a twinkle in her eye, I hope. We all still really got on. We were all doing the same thing, and therefore age didn't matter. And I still see them now, and I had a lovely car journey all the way down through France with three of the boys who last year with...
That was for Candice's wedding.
That was for Candice's Amazing. Wedding. So Michael, Andrew and Tom... We were all in the car together and we had an absolutely brilliant time. And it the fact that there's like 30 or 40 years between us didn't make any difference whatsoever.
No, and it comes across. You both, I think, have made lifelong friends from being part of the process. Is that fair to say, Howard?
It is, absolutely. And I think it's such a brilliant opportunity that you don't in your kind of, or certainly I didn't in my daily life, come across other fellow bakers in the way that you do when you're in the Bake Off tent. So, my reaction to that was to sort of spend quite some long nights at the hotel bar with them and chat. And I think that was a bit of a mistake on my part. I think the ones who went on to do better didn't get drunk the night before.
An amazing coincidence
I would learn from that if anybody gets the opportunity.
Well, look, let's take a look back at the week that was in the tent. And the first thing, obviously, Howard, you had 13 bakers in your year, and there are 13 this year. Any thoughts on why there are 13 this year? And why were there 13 in your year?
Ooh, do you know, there were all sorts of rumours about why they'd chosen 13. And I suppose the overriding one was that they were struggling. So normally you would have... six guys and six women, and they said to us that they really couldn't narrow it down to six women, so therefore they put seven in, which sort of gave you the impression that the standard of female bakers was much higher. They were desperate basically to get six men in there, but they couldn't actually narrow it down and pin it down. And actually it went on that in the end, from sort of week seven onwards, they were all women in the tent. So that it would be interesting if it's a similar situation, if gradually the men get kicked out. Yeah, because they're not meeting that same high standard.
Well, Rahulin winning last year was the first male winner in many years, wasn't it? Mm. But the previous winners, Sophie, Candice, Nadia, Nancy, Francis. You have to go back to John, I think, in Series 3 for the previous male winner before Rahul. Week one, cake week. And both of you had cake week in your opening weeks in the tent. I mean, you kind of expected that, didn't you, Jane, when you were going?
I would have expected it. I mean, it's fairly classic, isn't it? What do you think of a baker? You think of bakers like either making cake or bread, and you never do bread week one, she says. I don't think we've ever done bread week one. So cake is an obvious choice, really. So
The only week, actually, in the history of Bake Off that it wasn't cake week in opening week was the last year. They went biscuits on the opening week.
Oh, did they? So, I didn't remember that.
Did it a little bit differently last year.
That's me.
Do you think that's a good week to start with cake? I think, because is it fair how people think of baking and think of cakes? It seems like the most natural place to start almost with the show.
I think it is. I think in a way, though, it's tricky because it is added pressure because you know that the public are going to be expecting you to turn out these most fabulous cakes, you know, in week one. And as I said earlier, sometimes nerves and things, the whole experience of it being your first time in the Bake Off tent, it can affect how you perform. So there is an added pressure in trying to deliver your best possible cakes in that first week, really.
Absolutely. Look, Jane, we look back to your time at Cake Week. You went for lemon and poppy seed drizzle cake, the technical with Jaffa cakes in your week. Your showstopper was a chocolate orange mirror cake. Well, those are things you felt very sort of secure on. Those sort of things you had a lot of time to practice.
To be honest, you don't get an awful lot of time to practice. I mean, for me, I don't know about for Howard, we get briefed on what we've got to bake in week one. For us, it was 5 weeks before. And then by the time you're doing all the stuff for the other weeks, you probably go into that tent not having baked that for 4 weeks. So you don't get masses of time. And I'd just like to say that when you're sitting on the sofa and you're watching some poor contestant being grilled by Paul saying, "How have you ever done this from start to finish?" And people say, "Oh, no, I've done it in bits." And you all sit at home going, "Well, it serves you right if you haven't practiced it." You just don't have the time. It's not until you've actually been part of the process that you realise that having to prepare the recipes for the various episodes, which you have to do in advance because all the home economists and everybody getting all your ingredients have to know what you're going to bake, it's such a short period that you really don't get much time to then run through your recipes. So if you're sitting at home judging because somebody said they've not put it all together before or managed it in the time, it's because you don't get that much time to practice.
Yeah.
So for my work, answering your question, sorry, I went a bit off there.
Well, we should say you were Star Baker in Star Baker week, which week. Was your only Star Baker week, is that right?
I'm not having a go. I was hoping to do what Nancy did and get Star Baker in week one and then Star Baker in week 10, but I didn't quite pull that off, sadly.
You did very well, Jane. You did very well.
But I could argue that I was robbed in some other weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. I saw a little stat that said you pretty much have to get Star Baker at some point to make it all to the way to the final. So only one contestant ever since they went with the Star Baker concept in week two has made it to the final three without being a Star Baker, and that was Mary Ann all the way back in series two. So you pretty much know you need to get at least one in the bank to if you're going to get towards the end.
I think people look back at all the statistics and can make of it what they will. I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, and I'm a mathematician, you can juggle your statistics to make it fit whatever your theory is. I think every week, or sadly for some of them this year, every week you have to be better than one other person. And it doesn't mean you have to have Star Baker. You can... Kate in the final last year actually just got better and better and better, and then she was in the final. You know, I think you do improve as you go through, and I don't think it matters a hoot if you're Star Baker. As I said, you just got to be better than one, or for 1 week this year, two other people.
Yeah, better than two
or
at
two,
one point.
2 weeks this year, because the final you need to be better than two, don't you?
There's also the bit of the curse of the Star Baker. I think in the last couple of years, sometimes people have been Star Baker and then gone the following week, which is, you know, a bit a bit sort of a, from brutal. One extreme to it. It is really brutal. Yeah.
Well, I think it was Anne-Marie the year before me? She was star Baker week one and went out week two. The thing about Bake Off is you need to be a jack of all trades. So you can be brilliant at cake or brilliant at bread, as Louise was in my year, and then stumbled over biscuit week. You know, you have to be able to do all of it well enough.
And Howard, your time on Cake Week, that was a passion fruit and coconut cake, your tentacles angel food cake, showstopper the Black Forest Revisited, and you were one of the judges' favourites that week, but you weren't star baker.
I think that's really interesting as well, because I think you know if you are star baker, because obviously they tell you you're star baker, but it's not until you actually watch the programme back that you know that you were close to being star baker. They don't tell you who's in the running for going and who's in the running for star baker.
That's a great point. As a viewer, we see it and we know Howard's had a good week. You're left to imagine how you might. Get some feedback, obviously, but not to the extent of what we see as a viewer.
No, I remember them because they're constantly, the production team are constantly interviewing you in order to do those little interviews. And they said, you know, you've had a really good week and so on. But as I say, it wasn't until I actually watched that programme when it was broadcast that I knew that I was even in the running for being star baker that week.
It's an interesting point, actually. We only see that when the general public watch it.
Yeah.
So in terms of this week on the episode, it was a fruitcake for 2.5 hours. Is that something you would have enjoyed the challenge of straight away as you walk into the tent, Jane?
Yeah, I would have loved the fruitcake challenge. And I was really pleased to see it there because I think fruitcakes are probably not made as frequently as they used to be in my mum's day. I must admit, when I first heard it, that it had to be beautifully decorated, I immediately thought, oh gosh, Christmas cake, marzipan, fondant, how on earth are they going to do that in 2.5 hours? Because I immediately go into Christmas cake mindset. And I thought the way they decorated these cakes was amazing. So I would have loved it. It's actually inspired me. And if you don't mind me sort of just digressing a little bit, I think in the past couple of years, I found some of the challenges so difficult that I can't imagine many home bakers sitting down and thinking, oh gosh, I'm going to make that next week and we're going to sit and eat it while we watch the next episode. But I found that the fruitcake recipe has got me really thinking, oh, I could make this, that and the other. What a lovely idea. And I think for me, that's what Bake Off is. It's encouraging people to bake things perhaps they wouldn't normally bake and give them the confidence to do that and make it very inclusive. If it gets too complicated, it gets to be a bit like Bake Off the Professional, something that you love to watch because it can be a bit of a car crash, but not one that you want to participate in. And I think Bake Off needs to be careful that it doesn't try to get too clever. And I think from what I've seen of this episode, it's almost going back to the things I always loved about Bake Off, is it makes everybody feel as though they're part of it. And I absolutely loved the fruitcake challenge.
Howard, one of the things that came across was quite a lot of people using family recipes in this episode. It was James referring to using grandma's recipe, Steph referring to her great-grandma Rosie, and then straight away we had Rosie using her grandma's recipes. And the tradition, that's a big factor of Bake Off, isn't it? People coming into the tent and using family recipes.
It is. But what I particularly liked as well was the fact that, as Jane was saying, it's great to see fruitcake back in the Bake Off tent. I think people quite often think that fruitcakes, you know, take a long time to make. They need to mature for a long time. So to be able to see that people were using almost like tea loaf kind of recipes was great. And I think, as you say, the fact that you've got kind of family references and history there, it feels lovely to have that, I think.
There are a few things that leapt out to me, and listeners of the podcast over the next 10 weeks will realise I'm not the expert in baking here, and that's why we've got Jane and Howard with us. But David's fat-free version and going to sort of carrot and squash as alternatives, having fats in there, that was quite interesting, Jane. That was a little bit different.
I thought that was really interesting. I'm, again, intrigued to try it because We get a bit of a bad press sometimes as bakers about you ought to be more responsible, less fat, less sugar, or you ought to be encouraging people to be more healthy. I'm of the a little of what you fancy does you good as long as it's everything in moderation. But for David to be going in, what was it called, squishy, squashy fruitcake, I would really love to have tried it. And actually, the judges seemed to think it was brilliant. It got a little bit too much almond in it, but that was the only thing that they criticised him on. I'm intrigued to try that. I think that's one of those ones I'm going to, well, I might try and get hold of him and find out if I can get the recipe. Because the difficulty with that is it could be very soggy. It could end up being like sort of bread pudding, if anybody remembers bread pudding. Do they still make bread pudding? Where it's really soggy. But it obviously wasn't. So, yeah, good for him.
Do you think that's why he called it squishy squashy?
Yes, I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Just in case it went too soggy. I've covered my...
Yes, I've covered myself with that one.
For you, yeah.
That's a good theory there, Howard. One thing that also, like, Michelle brought her own eggs. Do you ever bring your own eggs from to the tent with you, Howard?
No. I don't, no. Honestly...
You don't have a chicken.
I live in a tower block. I don't have a chicken. It'd be a shame, wouldn't it, to keep a
chicken. Well, great thing, though. Bring your own. I mean, we'll talk about it, because you obviously you can, as we'll I'll ask you about another time, perhaps. You occasionally can bring, you know, items into the tent with you, but to have your own eggs, I mean, that's a touch that they seem to do her fairly well during this episode. Was anyone sort of the main thing that came across is always it's a challenge leaving enough time to decorate, and that must be one of the challenges that faces you throughout the competition.
Timing is the thing that scuppers you, and timing is the thing that makes you look foolish and incompetent, because it's really tight on timing always. I think what they think is, how long would they need to make this? 6 hours, right, we'll give them three. Inevitably, when you're filming things, you have real time restrictions, and we had incredibly long days, so they can't give you too much time. The problem is, when you're at home devising these recipes, you have no idea who you're baking against. You know they're going to be absolutely brilliant, and you try and throw everything but the kitchen sink at it. And then you inevitably get in the tent and you run out of time. Now, my advice to anybody who's even thinking of applying for the next series, Series 11, is... the important thing is, one, it tastes good, and two, you get it finished. So in the early stages, try and pare back and make sure that actually you can complete the task. Because looking at these, some of them are really quite simple bakes, relatively speaking, and relatively simple decoration, but they were beautifully executed. And I think sometimes we put too much pressure on ourselves to turn out the Leaning Tower of Pisa, when really we could just do... you know, a cottage in the garden or something.
I mean, that does the fact that you've only got to be make sure you're not in the bottom one, usually accepted that this season there'll be a moment where there's two that go. Does that play into it when you talk about safe bakes? Just do something good that's going to get you through. You're almost relying on someone else, not, you know, trying to be too ambitious and it goes the other way. Does that come into your mind at all, Howard?
I think it's difficult, because I think sometimes when the brief itself makes you feel that you need to be going that extra mile, so that it will sometimes say within the brief, you know, it needs to be beautifully decorated, it needs to be a real showstopper, a stunner or whatever. And you think, I don't know what they actually mean by that. Where am I needing to pitch this? So quite often people will go over the top and they could pare it back. And then other times people will produce something which is very simple and a little bit safer and nail it.
Absolutely. Well, moving on to the technical challenge, the challenge was to make six identical angel cake slices. Prue referred to it, I think, as being cruel during the episode. Is it cruel, Jane, or how would you have responded to this?
Well, I frankly would have loved that challenge. Right. Basically, you're making a three-coloured Genoese sponge and you're making, I can't remember what the filling, what did the filling
Italian
have to be?
Meringue,
Italian meringue buttercream. Yeah. And slapping on a bit of icing. I mean, I don't want to do it down, because they only had an hour and three quarters, but I don't think it was one of the hardest technicals ever. One thing that did surprised me is some people had never made Genoese. Mm. And going back to series six, was that when Paul Jagger was on, series six? I remember Paul, who's an incredible baker, and I've met him several times since he appeared on Bake Off. He was doing a technical and it was a Genoese and he didn't know how to do it. Mm. Now, I would have thought if anybody had watched series six, they would all have made sure they could do a Genoese. I think it was Helena who said she had never made a Genoese. And certainly it didn't look as though some of it was something that they made on a regular basis. We, I think, made Genoese about three or four times in our year. So, I mean, I would say that, wouldn't I? But I think that just shows that perhaps you haven't done your homework. And had some of them made a Genoese before, they would have found it much, much easier challenge. A much easier challenge.
You agree with that, Howard? Is that your
thought? I do, although I have to say, for the first week, I think I would have been personally nervous at doing Italian meringue buttercream. Yeah. I think I could have managed okay with the Genoese, but to do the two of them in the first technical, it's quite tricky, really.
Yeah, Italian meringue buttercream. So much
can go wrong with it.
Especially with heat as well. Yes, you can get a load of slop if you're not careful.
Jamie had to start again, which we saw. I mean, how bad does it have to be? And are you kind of looking around at everyone else to see if anyone else is starting again before you decide what to do? How did you have those moments where you've gone, right, I've seen someone else is starting again. I don't like the look of what's in front of me. I'm going to start again.
There were rumours at one point that you weren't supposed to start again in a technical, and then I think they realised that actually there's no benefit in that. I remember starting again in dessert week. We had to do these floating islands, Île Flottant, and they were terrible.
I've never made them.
Have you not? I'd done that, and I think they caught. I think. It was Mel and Sue at the time. One of them commented that basically it was an example of global warming. It was, they looked dreadful. So I had to start again. They said, you've got time. But you can literally see other bakers like turning round, realising that you're starting again with your meringue, you know.
Absolutely, and we also saw a moment where Dan forgot to even put his timer on when he was hoping to sort of have, you know, 10 minutes on there, and he looked at it and it still had 10 minutes because he'd forgotten to, you know, very easily done. Henry was the winner with Rosie second. Quite impressive work from young Henry. Jane, do you think?
Yes, well, I mean, I have no favourites, really, in the tent.
Okay, I think you've just told us who your favourite is.
You see, Henry, my son's called Henry.
Right.
Okay. And, yeah, I have a big soft spot for Henry. So he did incredibly well. I think he had a... And when he crushed his little house, which was so good in the signature, and then he had a really good technical, I have to say, I was very, very pleased.
Felt like a proud viewer.
You can't help but want to support some of these.
Well, he's 20 years old. Incredible.
I know, he was 20. I mean, you're going back to sort of right at the beginning when we were talking about their ages. I just think it's brilliant that some of these young people, sort of 20-year-olds, are getting into cooking.
Yeah.
And for me, as a real oldie, we used to do lots of cooking with our grands and things, and our mums, and my dad, actually. My dad used to do a lot of cooking with me and encourage me to cook. I think we've lost a generation almost of home cooks for a variety of reasons. People are very busy. Everybody goes out to work. So to see youngsters coming in and being so capable and enjoying it so much, I'm absolutely thrilled. So, yeah, the youngsters, both Jamie and Henry in this, but, you know, Henry because it is a Henry. I'm afraid I do love a Henry.
So, yeah, very impressive work from Henry in the technical. Let's just talk briefly about the showstopper, Howard. It was supposed to be a cake you have dreamt of as a child. You know, what do you think you would have gone for in that scenario?
Do you know, I was trying to think about that, what I would have, and because I've not got a sweet tooth, I suppose as a child I dreamt of crisps and things like that, cheese and biscuits.
Did you?
I don't think I would have dreamt of a cake. Is that strange? Crisp cake, yeah.
You could have had a crisp cake.
Or cheesecake.
Yeah, cheesecake. Jane, what do you think you would have been going for in the same circumstance?
Again, I don't really know, because I was spoilt because my grandfather owned a bakery. So in my early days, we used to get cakes from the bakery. And I remember a really beautiful ice cream cake where it was a doll when the skirt was all piped ice cream and frozen. I loved that. I don't remember being mad about cake either.
No.
We were a bit spoilt, and we certainly wouldn't have had some of these. I mean, they were fantastic.
It did.
They?
You know, the one thing though about age, it did make me feel very old when Jamie was getting nostalgic about salted caramel. What is that? It's only been around a few years.
It has.
It has.
But actually, sorry, this is not a Henry fan club meeting here. But I was with my kids this weekend. They were both visiting, and they were talking about a book. It was Enid Blyton, The Folk of the Faraway Tree, and there was a whole series of them that I loved as a child, and then my children loved when I used to read it to them. And Henry said his was based on the magic faraway tree. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but this boy must be a long-lost son of mine or something.
Right, so we will rename this podcast the Henry Fan Club until if and when he departs from this year's series. Whose showstopper really caught your eye, Howard, in this week? I mean, Jamie didn't put any eggs in his mix, having restarted his technical, then decided to not go for any eggs. But who caught your eye?
Oh, it was a bit risque, wasn't it? I mean, I have to say, we have to get it out there with the fairy garden and poor Phil stroking his rocket. You could tell that the production team were having great fun with that showstopper, weren't they?
You could imagine them being in the edit suite
and
creasing themselves.
Yeah. Oh dear. And when, even Michelle's fairy toadstool, when Prue said, "I'm dribbling," and they said, "Don't say that."
Yeah, there were a lot of moments from this year's series. Actually, weren't there a lot of moments? That could be a theme that we'll no doubt watch carefully. Jane, just very quickly, Phil, I think Howard just referred to the cone there, but he was using this technique of marshmallows. It looked like Rice Krispies. What exactly was that all about?
Yes, it's been used a lot in past series. I think Candice used it to shape the neck and head of her peacock once. I think Nadi has used it as well. It's a very good way of forming a stable structure that you can shape very easily into what you want. So you can mould it. So for Phil and his nose cone of the rocket, it worked perfectly, and it's quite light. So if you're having it as the top tier of a cake, or you've got to balance it on something else, it's a brilliant
thing. It's a good technique. Thing.
Yeah, it's a really good technique.
Well, it seemed like sort of, you know, Helena, having not looked too impressive in the first couple of challenges, sort of probably got herself out of and away from danger. It comes to a key point in the podcast each week, which we're going to call Judge Jane.
Ooh.
Where we're coming to you, Jane, to understand, was it the right decision? So first, in terms of star baker Michelle, I'm not convinced that you were certain it was going to go that way.
I think it was a really difficult week to pick star baker. Very often you can. And just to remind everybody that what we see on telly isn't a taste test. So we have to rely on the judges for their taste, and stuff goes on and is said that you will never see. It came as a bit of a surprise, to be honest, for Michelle. I mean, my notes were for her batter breath, which looked lovely, tough but with good flavour. I've got tough and flat for her Genoese, although she came six, but exquisite, wonderful and faultless for her showstopper. So, but then Helena had the most fantastic showstopper. I thought that was my showstopper of the week, was Helena's. And I don't think she had terrible trouble with her signature. She just couldn't make caramel. Well, given my experience in the tent and those dreadful saucepans, Mary Berry told me to get a steel pan and not a nonstick. Bless her. I don't think she had a particularly bad week. She came last in the technical. So I think there were, I thought David could have won it almost. Yeah, I think David could almost have won it. He was quite there or thereabouts on a lot of stuff. So Michelle, not that I didn't want her to win. I mean, I thought she did make a lovely fairy toadstool cake at the end, and carrot cake's always a favourite. I just think it was a very difficult one to choose, to be honest.
Absolutely. And then, look, it's never nice to see someone go and you do all that work, all that preparation, knowing you're going to be in the bake-off tent for months, and then someone's got to go after just 1 week, and that's got to be unfortunate. But was Dan the right person to go, Jane?
I think Dan was the right person to go. He seemed to have a bit of mare at all levels, really. Howard and I were talking as we were approaching here for the podcast, and I think it would be really kind if they didn't have an elimination in week one, gave everybody a chance to settle into the tent, because it can be overwhelming. And poor Dan was obviously thrown by how much fruit he had to put into his last, into the showstopper, or no, into the signature, sorry, and changed it on the day, and it's a disaster trying to change it on the day. And I think he probably was more overwhelmed than anybody else in the tent, and it would be so kind to give everybody a week to settle in.
Yeah,
I think.
Absolutely. Well, I did notice that last year's winner, Rahul, was from Rotherham. Dan was from Rotherham. People were wondering whether Rotherham was the key to winning Bake Off, but sadly it doesn't look to be the way this year.
He seemed lovely as well. I was sad to see him go.
Now, another part of the podcast is going to be Howard's Hump, which, for clarification, which is possibly needed. We want to know, Howard, what would have given you the hump from this week's episode?
I suppose it's the same thing that gave me the hump when I was on Bake Off. So in our year, as we mentioned, there were 13 bakers, and I got the front work station, which was virtually past the judges' table. So you're pushed right at the front of the tent.
So would you only see that for this 1 week? Because then you'll be 12.
Absolutely. So it had been specially created for the fact that we'd got 13 bakers. And poor Priya was in the same situation this time. It's not bad until it comes to the technical, I think. And then you literally do feel like you're out on a limb, because if you get a workstation at the back of the tent, you can sort of survey what's happening. You can get a feel for how things are going. If you're right at the front, you've no idea. You've literally got to be turning around, and you haven't got time to be turning around, basically.
Okay, fantastic. Well, look, we've loved talking through episode one of the 29 series of Bake Off. It's wham, bam, thank you, Dan, as the 32-year-old support worker has left the tent, while Michelle was certainly the belle of the tent this week. We are going to be here every single Wednesday, so please do remember to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, and do tell all your Bake Off loving friends that we're here. We mentioned a competition earlier. For those of you that are interested in coming to one of our baking classes led by former Bake Off stars, if you head to bakewithalegend.com/thebakedown and leave your details, it will be a competition entry to win a place at Ian Cummings' class with us here in London on the 14th of September. So if you want to come and bake alongside Ian at our kitchen on Saturday, 14th September, go onto the website and leave your details, and we'll be picking a winner in a couple of weeks' time. If you want to get in touch with us at any point to tell us your stories, we want to hear stories about when you've bumped into a Bake Off star. They can be in the most peculiar of places, but if you've ever bumped into a Bake Off star, do let us know. It's thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. So if you want to get in touch, it's thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. So just overall, Howard, you out of 10, give episode one a rating, how much you enjoyed it.
Oh, I think it's a 10. I loved it, actually. Yeah, no, I was really, really taken by it.
You've set the bar incredibly high for what you're going to have to answer next week and the weeks after about it.
Well, can't we have a 10 every week?
We could, you're right. Jane?
Yeah, 10 for me too. Absolutely loved it.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thanks so much, Jane and Howard. It's been a real pleasure to sit and watch and review episode one with you. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.